Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today, and thanks to Jeff Epping for joining us as well. He's our guest, Director of Horticulture at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. So it's always great to have him stop by. And as we think about gardens, does your garden need some winter interest? Do you have questions about getting your garden ready for colder temperatures? I hope you'll join in at 800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Jeff Epping, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Good to be with you, Larry. Thanks for having me. Always fun.
Well, it is fun. And before we talk about gardening in general, let's talk about Olbrich Gardens. How have you been doing during this time recently of social distancing?
Yeah, well, the gardens, you know, a little bit different as everything is these days. So good news is the outdoor gardens have been open since about mid-June. And, you know, it's a big garden, over 16 acres, so lots of space. We made sure everybody was safe by, you know, getting them through the lobby in a hurry. And then once out in the garden, any narrow paths, we turned into sort of one way or closed them and, you know, gave people a lot of options to keep distant. And it worked out really well. And, you know, thankfully, one of the safer places that you can be is outdoors.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we're thankful that, you know, the horticulture staff was able to keep working. Of course, we rely heavily on volunteers at the garden, and we're a little slim in that regard, understandably. Yeah, it took us, you know, we fell behind a little bit this spring, but, you know, we caught up, and then some volunteers started coming back a little bit, and, you know, everybody wearing masks when they're working together and still keeping distance and all. So the gardens really are, you know, look great this season. It was a pretty good gardening season. We had rain on a pretty regular basis for the most part, not too hot. And, you know, so, as you know, you've been talking to a lot of people about gardening. It's it's been a good year that way. And now the conservatory is open and very limited quantities of people in, only less than 25%. And people aren't coming in throngs, but they are coming in a little bit. And, you know, those who we just need a break and some sense of normalcy have really appreciated it. So
there you go. Well, are you all moved into the new buildings?
Well, because of, you know, COVID, we have not opened the building. It's an education facility. And of course we've gone all virtual with our education program right now. So as soon as things, you know, normalize, we'll have that up and running. It's a gorgeous facility, and very, very sad that the timing was such. But you know, it is what it is, and it'll be great again at some point here. And yeah, it's a beautiful building. So yeah, we're happy, and we're working on the landscape this season, and next spring we'll complete all the perennial plantings and it'll all be ready to rock and roll. So it's a beautiful building, blends in nicely with the existing, and gives us some great opportunities to teach people about gardening, of course.
Yeah, and you are able to do some events virtually at least.
Yeah, we are a little bit, you know, it's been a little bit of struggle with special events this year. You know, we are open, the gardens are open free to the public, as you know, and so all of the monies that we're able to raise are through special events. And, you know, those, everyone has had to be canceled. So we're lucky enough to have a very large membership who have been very generous in, you know, keeping the donations coming to the garden and keeping us afloat. So we'll ride it out, and you know, we'll survive.
Yes, I'm convinced of that.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah.
Well, let's give our listeners a chance to join in. If you have a question or a comment for Jeff Epping, I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. And, you know, Jackie's on from Delavan, so let's go to Jackie. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. I'm calling because I had ordered a whole bunch of perennials, and then I broke my hand, so I wasn't able to get them in the ground. Is it too late to put them in the ground now?
No, not at all. In fact, I am guilty. I didn't break my hand, and I still have perennials and pots laying around. Because, you know, I just can't help myself. When I go to a garden center and see something that's cool, I buy it, and then I think, where am I going to put it for one, and then when? And so, in fact, this gorgeous week, I've been plugging away before darkness arrives. Never like when that comes, but it's so early. But anyway, no. So dig yourself a nice hole. You know, plant them as you regularly would. If the roots are pot bound, loosen those up. You know, snuggle them in a little bit, and then always good to put a, you know, water them really good, obviously, and then just put a nice coating of mulch. Like I use a lot of leaf mulch. Right now, it's, you know, I listened last week with Melinda Myers, and she gave some just fantastic advice on using the leaves that fall from all the trees in our own gardens. And that's what I use. I just mow them up, those that fall, like in my pathways, on my driveway, on my patio, on the street. I mow all that up, bag it, and then I use it as a mulch. And that is fantastic on the newly, you know, planted perennials as well. So that'll keep the ground from freezing for a while, so the root systems can continue to grow a little bit. And then once the ground does freeze, it keeps it frozen, which is important because plants can heave from alternating, you know, freezing and thawing, and they sort of pop out of the ground. And that's especially true on plants that we would plant at this time of year, later in the season. So if we get a good thaw, which we typically do in January, February, you might want to check them. And if they're kind of popping out of the ground a little bit, just step them back down in or push them back down in with your hands, and they should be good to go.
All right. There you go, Jackie. Thank you so much for calling. Let's turn to Dave in Broadhead next. Hi, Dave. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thanks, Larry. Hey, I've got a question. I've got a yew tree. Well, it's actually kind of a yew bush. And it needs to be trimmed back, but I don't know how much I can trim it back without killing it. I noticed that some places where I trimmed back branches last year, they actually had a little, it looked like they had new growth coming right out of the ends of them. So I thought, well, maybe I could cut it back. But I'm going to guess I need to cut it back by at least 25%, and I'm wondering if that's going to destroy it.
No, that's a great question. And yews, I typically like to prune closer to spring, but now, you know, you can still do it now after everything has gone dormant, which it pretty much has. So you're in okay shape, but you're right. On a yew, you can't just really hit them hard and take off all the foliage or more than half the foliage. You do it in a stepped process. And you just mentioned something that's important. If we do it in this way, if we just take off a portion and leave a good amount of foliage still there, what happens is it allows buds to break closer in, closer to the crown of the plant, to the middle of the plant. And then we get that new growth coming out. Then the next time we can prune back down to that or a little bit farther. And so we reduce the size of the plant. We force or allow new growth to happen, all those dormant buds in there. And so you can reduce a large yew by a good amount, but you can't do it all at once. It might be a 2 or 3 year process. Or if it's a really big plant, it might even be a little more than that. So that's important. I have seen a number of people kill a yew, even if they're big, by taking off all of the growth or 75% of the growth. I think 25% you should be okay. Again, I can't see the plant, but just use good judgment. You don't have to do it all in one season, like I say. So if you're not sure, I would lean on the side of less. Let some new growth ensue next season, and then, you know, prune it again.
go from there. Yeah, good advice. Dave, thank you so much. Yeah, go ahead.
One more thing is, you know, we have had a decent amount of moisture this fall, but if you're in doubt of your yew or any evergreen that you have being kind of dry, it's always good to soak those in at this time of year, because you want to get the plants fully hydrated. And because once the ground freezes, they can't take up any more moisture. But because they because they're evergreen, they can continue to lose some moisture through the winter. And if they're stressed or sort of dehydrated going in, you know, you might see some burning, and that's never a good thing. So something to pay attention. And like we mentioned earlier, mulching the root system keeps the ground from freezing, you know, later into the winter. Which also helps them along by being able to take up that moisture before it does freeze solid.
There you go, Dave. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Pat emailed that his peonies and his tree peonies are showing signs of breaking dormancy. Is this cause for concern?
Wow, that's interesting. I guess this, you know, this warm weather is good for some things and not for others. So I might be a little concerned, but I think they'll be okay. There's not much you can do about it, to be honest. Just, you know, kind of ride it out. I have seen that happen on rhododendrons at times as well. And sometimes when that happens, that new growth, if it continues to go and break that dormancy, that growth probably gets nipped back this winter. But then there'll be, again, dormant buds behind that will, you know, take over.
Yeah, well, for sure. Lynn in Reeseville emailed to ask when it's best to trim apple trees and also oaks. She added that her apples were deformed this year, and she wants to know what she could do to keep that from happening next year.
Well, it was a tough season. I said we had a good amount of rain. That's good and bad. You know, some plants really benefited from it, but so did the fungal diseases and some bacterial diseases, that sort of thing. I saw a lot of ornamental crab apples and apples looking pretty rough. Good news is it's usually more cosmetic and the plants bounce back. As far as pruning goes, you know, once plants are fully dormant, drop all their leaves, you're safe to start pruning. If you don't have a lot of pruning, a lot of people wait closer to spring, say, you know, February, March, April. But if you have a lot of plants like we do at Olbrich, we start pruning right after the holidays. You know, at any time when it's dormant, it allows you to see the plant very well, you know, see the structure. We always like to really analyze the plant, walk around it several times, you know, see how it looks from every angle. And then start out by taking out any dead, diseased, broken branches first, and then, you know, kind of thin after that. You know, plants have all those branches for a reason. They're all producing energy for the plant. So just pruning, you know, for pruning's sake isn't always necessarily a great thing. We are minimalists when it comes to pruning, and like I say, taking out those types of branches, any branches that are crossing, rubbing where they might open up a wound, and then work with the natural form of the plant, you know, 90% of the time, right? I mean, we use hedges and things like that in our garden, so that's something a little different. But it's always good to know what your plant wants to be when it grows up, you know, what the shape it wants to be, and then work with that rather than trying to fight it, because you never win. Mother Nature always wins that battle. You know, it's always wanting to do one thing and you're trying to do something else. We always prune on dry days, and we sterilize our pruners between cuts, only between cuts if it's diseased, but between plants for sure, with rubbing alcohol in a spray bottle or a 10% bleach solution, or we even use spray Lysol as well. So, so that's sort of the deal. And
the oaks, you wait on the oaks, right?
Yeah, well, until they're dormant, correct? Is that right, Larry? Is that what we're
I'm not sure what the DNR recommendation is now on oaks, but just for oak wilt, I know you don't want to have you don't want to have those beetles having any chance to get at the sap that might come from an oak.
Exactly. Oaks and elms, another group. We always wait until winter sets in for sure, and better to be safe than sorry. Those are such valuable trees for us. We don't want to take any chances.
For sure. Jeff Epping, our guest, Director of Horticulture at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. Great to have him with us. Great to have you listening in. And great to have Jill Nadeau as our producer and Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. My guest today, Jeff Epping, Director of Horticulture at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. Talking with him about all kinds of things. We've looked a bit at evergreens and plants with winter interest, or we're going to anyway, and certainly taking your questions at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us, lots of people have, at ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to John in New Glarus next. Hi, John. Thank you for calling.
Hey, morning. Thanks for taking the call here. Just a quick question about canna lily bulbs. As far as I understand, they cannot overwinter in the ground. So I'm just wondering, if I take those out, what's the best way to keep them? Do I need to wrap them up? Do they need to be a little bit wet? What's the best way to keep them so when we get to the spring, they're not rotted and I can plant them again?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, if we're down in the Carolinas or so, you'd probably be able to leave them in the ground. But here, that's not gonna work. They'll freeze solid, and that'll be the end of them. So, right now at the garden, we just finished digging all of those types of plants up. So, cannas, gingers, that sort of thing. Some we store in sort of a greenhouse or hoop house, and keep them minimally heated to about 50 degrees. With a canna, and I've done this personally, I haven't done it for a while, not growing them, but I just dig them in the fall. I shake off all the soil, and I put them in a garbage bag, and I put some some type of organic matter in with them. It could be actually even like leaf mulch or compost. And you don't want that to be wet. You just want it to be sort of moist. You know, if you squeeze it, hard, you don't want any moisture coming out of it. And I think more times than not, people leave a little bit too much moisture and they end up rotting on them. So you just put them in a black plastic garbage. You can put a lot in one bag and then store them in the cooler part of your basement. I just keep them on the floor because the floor always is a little bit colder. And tuck them in a corner. If you have a somewhat heated garage that doesn't freeze, that would work too. But like a detached garage like I have, it wouldn't work because that would still get too cold in there and freeze, and that would be the end of them. But you don't really have to do anything to them until spring. You might want to check them a couple times in the winter just to see what they look like. If there's like a lot of moisture in there and water is like beating up on the bag, you might just open the bag up and leave it for a few days and let it air out before you close it back up again. Or if it's extremely dry and the bulbs are kind of shriveling bad, you might add a little moisture. But they're tough. They're really tough. Yeah. And usually you don't have much problem with them.
All right, John. Good luck. Thank you so much. Kuki in Stevens Point, your turn now. Hi.
Hi. I have an eastern redbud that when I first got it, it seemed to freeze out 3 years in a row. And when it was growing, the deer ate it off for about 3 years in a row. And now I have this huge bush. And some of the things are they're about 5 feet tall. And I thought maybe I would take the straightest, tallest one and cut all the rest off. But I was listening to your program, and you said not to prune all of it at once.
Well, there's
something else I wanted to ask you. I mean, have you ever had flowers on that red bud?
The first year it was planted, it was very young. I got like one tiny area of flowers.
Yeah.
Well, the deer ate.
What I might tell you to do is, it sounds shocking, but I might shop for another red bud. There are a lot of red buds that are on the market in the Midwest that are really not hardy here. There is a strain of red bud that the seedlings or seeds that were gathered up to produce these plants come from trees in Columbus, Wisconsin, just east of Madison here. And they have proven to be some of the hardiest of the bunch. And they sell them, typically garden centers sell them as either the Columbus strain or Northern strain or even Minnesota strain. Because Dr. Ed Haslikas, who is a horticulture professor at the university here, recognized how significant those trees were. They surmised they came from Northern Indiana. And they are hardier than many, many strains of redbud out there. And so Ed would gather up seed and distribute them to all the nurserymen in the upper Midwest so that they would be growing this good hardy strain that was reliable in flowering. So if you have had such poor success and it dying back and that sort of thing, I'm guessing you have a southern seed strain. Which, you know, it isn't worth growing, to be honest with you. I might just be done with that one, plant a new one next spring, and you'll be much happier in the long run because you'll get flowers every year.
Yeah, and you might want to fence it off.
With the deer, yeah, that's interesting because that's not one that I assume the deer would be all that fond of. But, yeah, you know, when deer are hungry, they'll eat just about anything.
Yeah, yes,
and,
they will.
Yeah, plenty of them in Stevens Point, I bet.
Yeah, I'm sure of that. Kookie, thank you so much. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Gloria in Fenimore next. Hi, Gloria.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
You bet.
Great. Thanks for taking my call. Help. I really help. I have two beautiful cherry trees, and they have grown really, really nice. But what has happened is there is, during the winter, the deer have come with their horns and tried to mark up the trunk of my two beautiful cherry trees. Mm. So should I wrap them? Should I wrap it? Should I paint it? You know, paint it with that black stuff. Spray it with that black stuff, or what? It didn't show up with my. I had lots of cherries, other than fighting it with the birds. I had lots of cherries on my cherry tree, but and then now I'm putting an electric fence around the cherry trees so that the so the deer doesn't get into it.
Yeah.
That's the good idea.
That would be the first thing I was going to recommend is get some type of fencing around them because, the deer are rough on them at this time of year, especially. We don't use pruning paints or wound dressings, as they call them, except on a couple categories of trees during the growing season. That would be our elms and our oaks to protect them from feeding insects that would spread oak wilt or Dutch elm disease. So at this time of year, no, we're not going to put that goop on them. All the research actually shows that slows the healing process rather than helps it. It wouldn't be a horrible idea, I guess, if you were to wrap them, but with they have tree wrap that's sort of like a paper almost that might help a little bit. But typically at the garden, if we get that sort of thing, we don't wrap with anything. We just let it run its course and make sure that we protect it from happening again with either hardware cloth, if we're protecting especially small trees and fruit trees, especially from
voles or rabbits or meadow mice, as sometimes people call voles. And we just put a hardware cloth around the trunk of the tree from, you know, ground level, kind of even work it into the ground a little bit, pin it down, and then up to, you know, as high as you can get it, you know, within like three feet, 4 feet even, so that it stays above the snow line. Because if we get a couple feet of snow and that wire is only a foot or 18 inches tall, well, the rabbits or voles quite get at it. And so that's the reasoning there. But, yeah, it more times than not, the trees recover. You know, it takes some time. You'll see callus tissue form and slowly close that wound back up. But I think you got the right idea with that fencing. That should do the trick.
Yeah, for sure. Gloria, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Well, let's go to Bill in Fond du Lac next. Hi, Bill. What's on your mind?
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call. Yes, I live in Fond du Lac, and there's a creek behind my house. Goes the full length. And I have 170-foot of frontage, and I have an embankment that goes down to the creek, and the embankment's it's at least a 45-degree angle, or maybe a little more, and I have grass on most of it, and then it levels off, and about another maybe 8-10 feet goes to the creek. So I cut all the grass down there, but I was wondering, when I purchased this property a while back, there were some bare areas on the embankment, so I planted. I just didn't know what to plant. I didn't want to plant grass on everything. I was thinking of something different. So some guy gave me a bunch of irises. I put them in there, and I planted some little blue stems in there. And the question about that is, what would be if I want to just get rid of – I'm getting up there where I just don't want to cut that lawn anymore. It's pretty hard just to push the lawnmower around, even though I have a four-wheel drive one. But if I ever wanted to get rid of that grass, what would be a good thing for erosion prevention to plant along there? And one other question is, along the creek, you know, you get a lot of undermining of the water and ice hits it. And what would be a good thing for roots, some deep roots to plant? I have plants along there now. I have some giant miscanthus and some other plants, dogwood, and lilies, tiger lilies all over, just to kind of maybe prevent the erosion. But so curious about both those questions.
Sure.
Yeah, so I guess, you know, if it were me, I would look to some native prairie species, because, you know, they're super well adapted to our conditions. They have deep root systems, which, you know, allows them to grow through droughty situations, also stabilize the soil. You mentioned that, you know, you want to make sure that the banks don't erode. There's a lot, you know, you can go from sort of a short mix to a taller mix, depending on the species you choose. Through my, at Olbrich, we have done a number of stylized sort of meadows, and gravel gardens. And we use, you know, at least 75% native, plants. We do put some other non-natives in for a little added, you know, interest visually. But they all live well together, and you know, the after you get them established, really what you're looking at then is either burning them or you know, mowing them just once a season in the spring, and then they're good to go. And even more importantly, they provide, you know, all of our native insects and critters a place to live. And what's important about all those insects is that they provide food for all of our birds, that the songbirds that are, you know, struggling a little bit with the loss of habitat and such. So anytime that we can, you know, help them out by through our gardening, we do. And if you get a chance to either read or even tune into maybe a YouTube lecture by Doug Tallamy. Doug is an entomologist from the University of Delaware, and he has written a couple books. The most recent one is Nature's Best Hope, and it's all about us as gardeners providing habitat for all these creatures. And the best way to do that is to plant native
plants because they provide what all those creatures need. And if you love birds like, you know, like we do, that's the first step in helping them out as well. So Doug Talamy, and just to give up a promotion, we this winter are doing a virtual gardening series webinar, and Doug is going to be one of our guest lecturers for that.
Oh,
so
great.
Tune in to that. We have Heather Holm, who's going to talk about bumblebees. She's from Minnesota. We even have somebody from England, Fergus Garrett, and Lisa Hilgenberg from Chicago Botanic Garden, talking about that veggie gardening, and then finishing it off with some Old Brick staff, including myself, that kind of sort of tie it all together, what we're doing at Old Brick and what everybody can do locally to introduce a lot of the concepts that we'll hear about. But so anyway, getting back to your situation, that would be my recommendation. And there's a lot of people out there that can help you figure that out, and you know, good luck with that.
Yeah, there's some great opportunities for you there, Bill. And I think, I mean, that's what you just said, Jeff, was what was running through my mind immediately. And
okay.
I think it's a wonderful approach to saving that land along the river or along the creek that runs through. Good luck, Bill. Thanks very much for calling. Well, let's take another call. Sue in Madison, it's your turn now. Hi, Sue.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call. I don't have a particular plant or tree question, but I wanted to share a wonderful experience. My mother has moderate dementia, and this summer we started coming to Old Brick, and it was an amazing experience. We smelled flowers. She felt the texture of leaves. We felt succulents. We counted butterflies. And the most amazing thing, and this brings tears to my eyes, she remembered it.
Mm-hmm. And that's fantastic.
So we will be coming, and I hope to get her to the conservancy too. But you will see us many, many more times there. So Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you for that. That's bringing tears to my eyes.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, that's what gardens are about, right? I mean, some people come to see us to learn how to select plants and to garden, and others just come because it's just such a beautiful place to be. Your story is just fantastic. It makes us feel great. You know, we love to hear stories like that. And
Makes your work even feel more worthwhile, doesn't it?
It does. I always tell people, I'll never be a millionaire being a gardener and working at Old Brick, but I love to come to work every day. And when I hear stories like that, it makes it even better. So
yeah,
thank you for sharing that. That's awesome.
Thank you, Sue, very, very much. Well, you can join in too, by the way. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. And I hope you'll give a call. Or if you want, you could email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. And let's take another call. Dave in Tinley Park, Illinois. Hi, Dave. Thank you for calling.
Hey, hi, Larry. You always have great guests.
Thank you.
Hey, I just want to say, I got these hybrid salvia, and I just put them in my yard this year. They grew so nice and tall, but I can't leave them in the ground because you're going to, you know, freeze. So I pulled the roots out. Can I just take the roots and keep them in a tote or something, keep them moist? I heard you can do that, and then they'll last through the winter, and I can put them back in the spring.
Could you repeat what the plan was? I'm sorry.
Salvia, I think it was.
Salvia?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hybrid
okay.
salvias.
Yeah, hybrid
yeah.
salvia.
Okay. Well, you know, salvias typically don't have sort of a storage, you know, structure to their root system. So probably I might pot those up and either put them in a south-facing window
or if you're able to provide supplemental lighting with grow lights, that would be another way to do it. As you pointed out, they're hybrids, so you couldn't have sort of collected seed and expected them to, you know, come true to type from seed. So you did the right thing if you want to try to preserve those plants. A lot of those will, you know, will just kind of hang on through the winter months. You don't want to produce a ton of foliage on them and all that sort of thing and really fertilize the heck out of them. You just kind of want to give them enough to keep them, you know, kind of in a happy state. But, you know, kind of keep them there. And then when spring comes and light intensity increases, day lengths increase, and then we get warmer temperatures, you can get them back out in the garden. They'll, you know, perform better for you. So it's always a challenge, you know, trying to overwinter some of these types of plants, but it's always fun. It's a fun challenge too. And it'd be interesting to see how you do with those.
Yeah, for sure. Good luck, Dave. Appreciate your call. Lori in Richfield has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Lori.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Thank you. I'm wondering how my parents always took the geraniums out and put them in the basement and then put them back out in spring. And I've tried that a couple of years in a row, and I just can't get it right. Could you give me some advice on what I'm doing wrong or how to do it correctly?
Sure. Yeah. So that's funny you say that, because I remember my grandfather, he had a root cellar on the old farm, and he used to throw all sorts of things like that. And geraniums, he'd just kind of shake the soil off, throw them in a paper grocery bag and throw them in that cellar and pull them out the next spring and pot them up, and they'd always grow. And I thought, unbelievable that a plant could be that tough. So I think a lot of it actually is, you know, the conditions that you provide for them in the winter. So a root cellar is cold, or, you know, relatively cool and cold and a little bit damp. And so those plants were able to survive. Most people don't have root cellars. I wish I did, but I don't. I have a basement, and most parts of it are probably too warm to do what you're talking about rather than too cold. What probably is a little easier and a little more surefire is just to pot them up into a very, you know, tight container. You don't want to add a lot of soil, just enough to provide moisture for that root system. Put them in a cool bedroom, you know, on a windowsill with some light, and see if that works. There's always, you know, you could always do grow lights in the basement and give them a lot more of a good thing, and they probably put on some nice growth for you and that sort of thing. At Olbrich, we overwinter our geraniums in the greenhouse. What we do is we take cuttings late in the season, and, you know, they're only 2-3 inches long. We root them, and then we just grow them as small plants through the winter. By spring, they're a decent size, and then we use them out in the garden again. You and I don't have that luxury of a greenhouse, but you can do it, like I say, in a windowsill too. And, you know, usually that works. Sometimes you have issues with, like, white fly or other insects, so you'll have to, you know, hopefully you don't have to deal with those, but be prepared that you might.
There you go, Lori. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Jeff Epping is our guest today. Jeff is the Director of Horticulture at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Jeff Epping, Director of Horticulture at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. Always great to have him come by. And lots of callers online. So I think we will go right back to the phones, and let's turn to Gene in Eastman. Hi, Gene. Thank you for calling.
Hi. My question is, I want to move some asparagus, and I want to take at least 15 inches of soil with it when I move it. Is that feasible in the fall?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm not a
I have asparagus, and I grow it. I haven't ever transplanted it, and I don't claim to be an expert veggie gardener, but I would certainly think that it would be you want to do it right now, or do you want to wait until spring?
I want to do it now. I thought, being it was dormant, it might be plus. I'll just dig a trench and dig it up where it's at and put it in a different spot.
Yeah, and especially since you're going to kind of dig it up as a big old, you know, root system with all the soil, you know, or for the most part, the soil intact. I think that, you know, I think you wouldn't have any problem there. I just, again, after you move it, kind of water it in good to work the air pockets out of it, maybe put a little mulch over the top and let it go. I know I'm from the asparagus that I've transplanted, I've always bought it, you know, bare root in the spring and planted it that way, and it takes quite a while for it to come up. This way, I think you'd probably be a little bit ahead of the game. So worth a try. Yeah, I'd give it a try. Most of the dormant roots, you know, roots like that on different plants can be done in spring or fall. And and asparagus is so darn tough. I mean, I can't imagine it wouldn't work for you.
Yeah. Good luck, Gene. Thank you. Tom and Nina, your turn. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I bought some pompous plant from Prairie Nursery probably 4 or 5 years ago. And it's and I have several plantings in different areas of the yard, and it's in full sun. The soils here are clay, and it's and I had several years in which all the plants blossomed. This last summer, none of the plants produced blossoms, but they had the huge leaves are there. The plant looks healthy, but no blossoming.
That's interesting. And you don't have any big trees nearby that have grown that much bigger and shaded them in any way? Or is it pretty much the same as it was?
Not between them and the sun. They get the first sun rays that come in, and it's, you know, they've got a whole arc of sun during the day.
Okay. I don't know what to tell you. That's super unusual. We have some beautiful compass plants in the gravel garden at Olbrick, right there as you're going to walk in front of the conservatory, and they have gone great guns, and I think they bloomed at least the second year, and they just seem to get bigger every season. The only thing I was thinking is that, you know, maybe they're getting a little more shade than they'd like or something. It sounds like the foliage is healthy and everything. That's a tough one.
I have no idea. Maybe somebody else does.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's just so unusual. And the fact that everyone is doing the same thing and is healthy otherwise, unless there's something that was eating off the stems as they were coming up, and I'm sure you'd know that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I don't. We need our friend Neil DeBoll. Neil, call us. Tell us. I'm interested in knowing. If he doesn't know, nobody would. Maybe we can figure that out. Maybe somebody has an idea for us.
All right, Tom. Stay listening. Thanks for calling. Jack in Madison, your turn. Hi, Jack.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about the plants being stressed because of this warming up of the weather, and then they're blooming out and budding out, and then the winter's coming, and then the spring. Is there something I can do, maybe some fertilizer or something lightly, to help them along in the spring so that they don't have such a dieback?
Okay. You know, this is the thing, and this is the reason why native plants sometimes really should make up a good portion of your garden, not only for supporting, you know, pollinators and native fauna, insects, that sort of thing. But native plants are well adapted to these types of conditions. They're not fooled into growing when they shouldn't be, either too early in the spring or putting out a flush in the fall, during a little bit of a warm-up like this.
But with that said, you know, we all have some non-native things in our gardens, and we do certainly at Olbrich, and I do in my own garden, but we try to do a good balance. So I love, you know, things like oaks and such that really make up the backbone of the garden. And then, you know, maybe some of the smaller scale things and shrubs and even some perennials would be non-native. But with that, you know, sometimes you deal with these types of situations. So there's not a heck of a lot you can do about it from happening. I mean, you know, with the climate the way it is, you just gotta roll with it. So to help them out, yeah, I mean, if it's an evergreen plant, once it gets cold again, I don't think I'd water them at this point because it might just encourage them to grow more if you have something evergreen. So wait until it gets cold again and they kind of shut down, and then give them a little bit of drink so that they can get hydrated. If it's non-evergreen, then yeah, maybe mulch them well as far as the soil, so that they preserve moisture, and then next spring, you know, they're provided, you know, that nice stable soil condition. I'm not a big believer in fertilizing ornamental plants unless you know that your soil is deficient in something. So getting a soil test done to figure that out. I have actually, when I worked at Olbrich early on, like I've been there for over 26 years now, I was impatient because we wanted to get, you know, plant a lot of trees and get them big. And what I did is I did some fertilization of those trees, and lo and behold, a number of those trees ended up with weak wood splitting out during heavy snows or storms or such, and discovered that that was probably the case. So the best thing you can do is just keep them happy with watering them well in the spring or any dry spells next season if they do get set back a little bit, or you get that soil test done and they tell you that you're in need of something. But ornamental plants in general, especially some of the native plants, prairie plants, they do well with what they are provided. In fact, oftentimes better. If they get too much nitrogen, they flop over, they're more prone to disease, that sort of thing. So unless you know you need it, I wouldn't recommend doing a lot of fertilization.
There you go, Jack. Thank you so much. And Logan in Green Bay, what's on your mind?
Hi, Larry and Jeff. I really enjoyed the show. My question is to do with starting of plants from seed indoors. How soon do I start before the growing season? And these are all tropical plants.
They are tropical plants? Tropical plants?
Yes.
Okay.
And do you have means of like artificial lighting, or are you trying to grow these in just the windows with a good amount of light?
I think he wants to get – Logan, is it true you want to have them so they're ready to go out when spring comes?
Right. I've got light, except that they all require a long growing period. And, of course, in Wisconsin – and it's a short growing.
Yeah.
Season. And you're trying to grow them from seed or just overwinter them from plants?
From seed.
Okay. Well, most tropical plants are what we call day neutral. So they don't typically have a dormancy unless possibly they have like a thick seed coat or something like that needs to be broken. And that often can be done by filing them or sanding them or something like that, depending on the plant. You know, there's such great information out there on the internet these days on what you have to do with certain plants and to keep them, you know, happy either by propagating them in different means or growing them. And so you might research that a little bit, depending on the species that you're trying to grow. But I think if you have a good amount of light, you could get them going anytime you wanted. If, you know, you were deficient on light and you, didn't have a good say, a sort of south or west-facing window and couldn't provide enough light and didn't want to give them supplemental light with, grow lights, LED grow lights or something like that, then you'd wait a little bit longer so that when they germinate and start growing, they have more light. But if that's not the issue, I think you can get them going anytime now so that they'll be bigger by the time you want to, plant them out in spring or just have them as a house plant in your home.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me as well. Logan, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, Jeff Epping is our guest today. Jeff is Director of Horticulture at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. Always great to have him come by. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Thanks for listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Jeff Epping, Director of Horticulture at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. So, what gardening questions do you have? I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. And we have some open lines for you, so you can get on pretty quickly. Let's go to Katie in Burlington next. Hi, Katie.
Hi, how are you?
Good, appreciate the call.
We put in a solar panel system this spring, and then I have two, like probably 12, 13-year-old maples that are in the backyard, and I was realizing that now they're going to grow into the solar panel, cover up the solar panels. So I'm wondering if it's advisable to, I hate to lop them off where they look terrible, but is there a way to prune them where they won't, so they'll grow more outward and not look really terrible, but, not go up as much? And when would you do that if you when would I do that?
Yeah, and do you know what kind of maple they are by chance?
Boy, there's I would just be guessing.
Okay.
I can't remember what leaf color they are. I know there's some orange leaves and
sure.
They're two different kinds. I know that they're two different kinds.
Yeah, I guess the first thing I would do is I would contact a certified arborist who could take a look at those for you and give you an assessment. It's hard to know without seeing them. Yes, you're right. You don't just lop them off for sure. That's a good observation. Because when we prune trees that way, it just sets them up for failure and all sorts of problems later. But if you have a good certified arborist in your area, which I'm sure you do, you could have them come out, take a look, and they could be pruned in a way that could help. I don't know if it's, sustainable for the future, if it's going to be a tree that wants to be 80 feet tall and you're going to try to keep it to be 20 or whatever it is. That's really not realistic. What you might even consider doing is planting some smaller scale trees, in that area so that when the time comes to take down those that you now have, if they are not able to be kept to the scale that you need them to be, then it's not so traumatic. You already have a couple of trees or more that are filling that space and putting on some nice growth. And then when you remove the bigger ones, it's not such a shock.
Yeah.
So that might be the more sort of sustainable thing to do with the fact that you have these solar panels that need, you know, full sun.
Yeah, and those trees are going to want to grow toward the light. And that's
correct.
Those yep. branches, and, you know, just trimming them is not going to do you much good over the long haul, for sure.
Right, right. But you know, maybe if you can work with them for a few years, at least until you get those other trees, you know, off to a good start. You know, I've done a lot of that at Olbrich, actually, when we had some shade gardens and we had a tree that was failing and I knew that it wasn't going to be around much longer. I actually sort of opened up gaps in that bigger tree, planted some oak trees. And by the time we took down this big old hawthorn, which, you know, killed us to do, but it just, it was, you know, yeah. it was time. These oaks already filled the space nicely. Once that bigger tree was removed, then they really took off because they had more light. And, you know, it was so much easier to deal with that way.
There you go, Katie. Thank you so much for calling. Jerry in Cable, Wisconsin, your turn. Hi, Jerry.
Hey, I've got some tomatoes that did really well in the garden this year, and I'd like to keep the seeds or try and take the seeds out of them to grow them again in the spring. And I'm just wondering, what do I need to do that?
Do you know what tomatoes you had? Were they hybrids?
I'm not sure. There were some smaller ones. It wasn't quite the cherry tomatoes. They were a little bit bigger. They kind of looked like Roma tomatoes, but they weren't like the big ones that you would get in the store. They're a little bit smaller. We just really liked them, and I don't remember where we got the seeds for them from, so I'm hoping that we can take some of the seeds out here and we can save them and then plant them again in the spring.
Right. And Larry asked a good question, because hybrids are specific crosses between two parents, so to speak, to create that specific variety. And then once you collect that seed and grow it out, it doesn't come true to seed. So you'll have a whole mix of different qualities. And so you really won't get what you want in the end. Now, if it's an heirloom variety, these have been, you know, preserved over the years, and you can save those seeds, and they will come true to type. But it's hard to know. To be honest, most garden centers sell more hybrids than not. So likely that it might be.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah. But if it's not, and if it is an heirloom, yeah, then you just take those tomatoes, you remove the pulp, put them on, you know, rinse them, get the seeds separated, and then dry them, and then store them. Once they're dry, then store them in an airtight container in like a refrigerator for the winter. Even if you need to do that, I'm not sure, but at least store them dry, and then you know, then you can germinate them come spring.
Yeah, and you know, you're a gardener. You want to experiment. You can experiment a little and see what happens. But we're not holding out a lot of hope, Jerry.
And there are a lot of great, you know, a lot of great heirloom varieties out there, and I grow a number of them in my own garden, and. You know, it's always good to support those nurseries, and then you'll know what you're getting to, right?
Yeah. Thanks, Jerry. Angie, your turn. She's on the way to Governor Dodge State Park. Hi, Angie.
Hi.
Hi. I'm glad to be out and about today. That's a good one. Mm-hmm. I have a red bud flowering crab, Malus zumi calicarpa. And we love the flowers in the spring and the fruits in the fall. But over the years, it has progressively had smaller leaves and spotted. And I'm surprised it comes back every year. And I think it's less and less every year. And I noticed a neighbor's tree, another cherry, I think, or crab, had to be cut down. So I don't know if there's anything that I can do to prevent this. Thank you.
Yeah, well,
We have a number of ornamental crab apples at the garden, and we do have the one you mentioned, Malus Zumi Calicarpa. It's a yellow-fruited variety. It has typically pretty good disease resistance, though. This year, it took a pretty good hit with all that moisture that we talked about earlier. They're subject to apple scabs, eater apple rust, some other bacterial blights, all sorts of things, and the wetter conditions exacerbate that. It sounds like your tree may be declining over time. We've had a couple crabs fail over time, and one of the reasons was drainage issue. They don't like to be in poorly drained soils. And the drainage changed due to us building another garden and changing it. And so water settled in that location. And so they kind of failed over time. As far as doing anything for it, I mean, we don't spray anything at the garden. We don't put out pesticides. We let plants do their thing. And if they can't do their thing, then we take the chainsaw to them and plant something that will. And I'm not a big believer in treatments unless it's to preserve a tree that maybe have been impacted due to unforeseen circumstances like construction or something like that, where okay, you just got to get it through, healed up, and back to good health. So as far as spraying fungicides on those crab apples, I wouldn't recommend it personally. Maybe it's time to look for a different variety or a different tree altogether. I would look closely at the conditions of the site, look at the soil, have a soil test done. Sometimes, plants do well for a while and then they don't. And that is sometimes due to sun and shade. All of a sudden, you realize, boy, these trees used to do their, I hear this about like peonies or daylilies. They used to flower every year and they don't anymore. And then you start asking a few questions. It's like, well, the maple or the oak or whatever big tree is now completely shaded. Those plants and change the whole conditions. So, maybe that's part of it too. I don't know, but it's always good to do a little research up front. If you're not sure, get some advice from a professional. There's lots of good ones out there, and have them make a recommendation on what it is you might want to plant in that situation.
Yeah, there you go, Angie. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Chris in Kenosha, your turn. Hi, Chris.
Hi, thank you so much. Hi. My question, I have an Eastern redbud I planted a couple years ago. And I mean, I did work with somebody, but my I'm afraid it's too close to the house and to the, I have some Taylor junipers we planted it near. They're about 5 feet, it's about 5 feet away from the junipers and about 8 feet away from my house. And I just feel this thing is not, I think it's too close. And I'm wondering if I can move it. It's about 10 feet tall now, maybe 9 feet tall. Excuse me. And it's a multi-stemmed, Eastern redbud. And my other quick question is about moving some asters and sedums that I just planted last month. And if it's too late to move them.
Okay. As far as the redbud goes, you probably can't move that. Redbuds are notoriously difficult to transplant, actually. And I found through trial and error at the garden that I'm better off buying a much smaller plant and going with that. They grow fast. That's the good news. They don't transplant all that well. So something of that size, I'm guessing no. If it is kind of, you said 8 feet from the house, red buds can be pruned. They're often multi-stemmed. I think you said yours was, and you could probably work with it, with the house situation and just, prune it a little flatter on that side, which, you typically won't see anyway. But if it's growing into a juniper and you want to keep both, that's going to be a little more difficult. Junipers do not like any amount of shade. And so that red bud growing into it, providing the shade, will you know, either have the plant be deformed or, you know, kind of the shaded out areas will die out. So you might have to make a decision on that. Maybe you're better off moving the juniper or sacrificing the juniper altogether and planting something else in the shade as it develops. You know, and things change. In our, you know, I had a beautiful pagoda dogwood on the corner of my house that I just took to the ground. I took it out this year. It was 20, 25 feet wide. It was a beautiful plant. And over the years, I had lots of sunny things in there, and I had to transition them out into shadier and shadier over time. But then I just I had a portion of it die from a canker disease, and I just decided, yeah, I'm going to try something else. So I put in a hophorn beam instead. And now I have sun everywhere again. So I had to transplant all the shady plants somewhere else into my garden or give them away or whatever, right? And that's gardening. I mean, things are changing all the time. But in your situation, yeah, it's good to do the research up front. Know how big your plants are going to be. Work with them. Don't be afraid to cut down things or remove things. I often, again, at the garden, I plant fast-growing trees and I plant slower-growing trees, knowing that in the future something's got to give. And we cut down those fast growers and we keep the oaks or the maples or the ginkgo or whatever the species we put in between, because, you know, they're around for the long haul. But I wanted to fill the space, or I wanted to provide shade in a certain location quickly, but then I have a plan. And trees can be cut down. Most of people have this thing where I can't possibly cut down a tree, but yet shrubs or whatever, they have no problem doing that with. So don't worry about that. As far as transplanting those plants, I think you'll be fine. Just get a good root sort of ball with those things. Those are two tough plants, asters and sedums. And perennials, I transplant a lot of perennials in the fall at this time after they go dormant. If you get just a good root ball with it, they're tough, and they hardly even know you moved them. So again, settle them in, give them a little mulch, and they should be good to go.
There you go. There you go, Chris. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Gary in Waukesha, your turn. Hi, Gary.
Hi, good afternoon. I have a 5, maybe 6-year-old oak tree that I started from an acorn, and a tree fell down and split it right down the middle. I'm wondering if there's anything I can do to save it, you know, cut it off at the ground and see if something else comes up, or I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think if that tree had a good root system, which it sounds like it did, rather than, you know, a lot of people want to like try to save the broken pieces and like tape them back together or whatever, but that's really not good for the long-term viability of the tree. So yes, come spring before new growth ensues, or you could even do it now after it's fully dormant. Just cut it flush to the ground, and you will get, you know, maybe leave it up a couple inches, and you should get a new shoot coming up from that. Oftentimes, nurseries actually grow them that way, where they plant out seedlings, and they are just, the shape is all crazy on them. And then after being planted a couple years in the nursery, they cut them off. And then in one season, they just shoot straight up, and then they stake them. And then after the second or third year, they remove the stakes, and then they begin the branch, and then you have a nice, good central leader. So I would, after you cut that back, might want to put some fencing around it or something, after, you know, when that new shoot comes up, because you don't want that to get eaten off or broken off by something or somebody. After I put in all that work. That's cool. That's fun to plant things, especially oaks from an acorn, and have them in your garden for the future.
Absolutely. Good luck, Gary. Thank you. Lucy in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Lucy.
Oh, hi, Larry. Thank you for taking my call. One quick question about my Twist and Shout Endless Summer Hydrangea. It is not giving me endless summer blossoms. In fact, this year one blossom, last year hardly any. The bush is very healthy. I'm not sure what you would advise me to do.
Endless summer is not endless. Endless summer of no buds.
endless bummer, maybe. But, yeah, I really thought that group of hydrangeas would be better for us, to be honest. So this is the macrophylla, the big leaf hydrangea, and they have done some breeding work and have found that some varieties will bloom on new wood and obviously old wood, which they always have. What's significant for us is that if the shoots die off in the winter, because they're not the hardiest hydrangea in the world, then the new shoots that come up will produce flowers because they bloom on new wood. That's what would happen, right? But it takes a while for those flower buds to form, and then they'll bloom, but much later. And personally, I just don't think they're worth growing. Now, a lot of people might not be happy with me for saying that, but farther south, I've seen them perform a lot better, where they'll bloom both on the new wood and the old wood. We have planted a number of varieties at Olbrich, and, you know, some are a little bit better, and then some years they're pretty good, and other years we get nothing. And the thing that I like the least about them that I found is that most of them are not very drought tolerant, so you're having to water them a lot. And I personally have planted a lot of our, it's not native to Wisconsin, but it's native to U.S. native, is the smooth hydrangea, Hydrangea arborescens. And this is what Annabelle, everybody knows Annabelle hydrangea. That's just one variety. There's pink varieties of it now. There's dwarf ones. There's white and pink are the only two colors. But they just want to grow. You know, they grow in crummy conditions, full sun, full shade. Once you get them established, they're dry soils. They're perfectly happy with. I've seen them growing in their native habitat, growing right out of rock. And you know, so they're just such a better choice for us, to be honest. And I kind of pass on a lot of those fancy leafed ones. And if we're a little warmer, you know, and maybe in 25 years, you know, the global warming becomes a little stronger, we'll be able to grow them better. But at this time, they're kind of a specialty thing. They're kind of like a hybrid tea rose that you have to fool around with a lot. So if you want yours, if you want to keep it, mulch it. Put mulch it with like straw, and then maybe put some pine boughs over the top of that after Christmas when you cut up your Christmas tree. And then you will preserve this year's growth, which then will be the, you know, first year, second year's growth, whatever, to bloom next year. So
there you go.
Give you more blossoms. Yeah.
And on that note, Jeff, we're out of time. Thank you so much for being with us today. Always fun having you here, and I hope we have you back again soon. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure, Larry.
Jeff Epping of Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. Take a look at their website, olbrich.org, and you'll learn even more about that wonderful place. Well, thank you so much for listening today. Jesse LeGru comes back to talk about your computer on Monday. In the meantime, stay with us. Lots in store. I'm Larry Mueller.